Hey everyone, I'm Devin.
And I'm Asia, and we're your hosts, and this is the latest episode of On Their Behalf.
So on Criminal, she interviews this guy who interviews fucking serial killers. And he interviewed, or like actually sat down with fucking Ed Gein.
What?
Yeah. Like, and he was like, because then Phoebe asks him, like, what was he like? Like, how did he treat you? And, like, he was like, no, he was just, you know, he was very polite and, you know. And I'm like, you mean the guy that, like, fucking murdered people and took off their skin and made masks with their skin?
People can be more than one thing.
Wow. Like, holy, he was, like, respectful, shit. But it's also, like, how, what's his face from Mindhunter?
I don't know. I could not watch Mindhunter. I can't, I probably have told you this before, but like, I can't watch Mindhunter because I have facial blindness specifically for Jonathan Groff. I know his name. I could not tell you what he looks like. Like, every scene in that show, I was like, who's this guy now?
Seriously?
And then Gabe was like, just assume it's the same guy. And then I would do it, and he's like, no, that's not the guy. I don't know what it is.
Does he look different every time to you?
Yes. Or I just don't remember. It just doesn't stick. I don't know.
That's really weird. But who's the serial killer that the guy that killed his mom?
I didn't get through the first episode. Which is crazy, because I would love that show, right?
You would. It's really good.
I can't do it. Maybe, though, now that I watched Hamilton.
Ed Kemper. Yeah, Ed Kemper. But, like, the actor that plays him, like, he's so calm and, like eerily just talks about murder like it's, like, this is what I had for breakfast, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that is so fascinating to me. Like, their brains just don't work the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But also the way that their brain works are so, it's just so fascinating to us and so appealing to us that we don't, that's why a lot of people fall for like serial killers, like they're like charm and they're so charismatic, and because they're obviously mirroring what you want to see and mm-hmm. what you think like normal good people are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's fascinating to me that we, because our brains actually work with sympathy and like empathy, and we don't seek to see the bad in people, that they're able to like play off of that and,
oh yeah,
like really lure us in. Yeah. And it's so fascinating to me.
I know, it is fascinating. You know what else is fascinating? Our case this week. This week, I'm telling the story on behalf of Tamla Horsford. So before I get started, I want to say most of the research in this episode was based on the Rolling Stone article by Niall Capello called The Unanswered Questions of Tamla Horsford's Death. Mm-hmm. It was the most thorough research and like best structure I could find. So shout out to Niall. Mm.
What up, Niall?
This was one of those cases that has sort of like very little sort of like streamlined stuff. It's all like sort of bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the article that I found that sort of like compiled everything
okay.
the best.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Tamla Horsford was born in the Caribbean in St. Vincent and the Grenadines in 1978. She moved with her family to the Bronx in 1989, where she met, and then later she met her husband Leander in Florida. They went on to have 5 sons together, and Jeez. She became stepmom to Leander's daughter. So they had six kids altogether. Yeah.
Holy shit. All right.
So five boys and one busy. Girl. They're busy. In 2013, the Horsfords moved to... Oh, I'm assuming Horsford is her married name, but now actually I don't know. Whatever. They moved to Cumming, Georgia in Forsyth County in 2013.
Okay.
By most accounts, Tamla was the life of the party, loved to laugh, dance, have fun. She was warm, charismatic, and made friends easily. In 2018, they had only lived in Georgia for 5 years, but they had fit right in, assimilated, made lots of friends, and became, you know, a fixture in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But on the night of November 3rd, 2018, Tamla made dinner for her husband and her five boys before heading out to celebrate her friend Jean Meyer's birthday. Tamla and Jean met at the local football league, and Jean had invited Tamla to join her group of friends. For her birthday, Jean was having an adult sleepover to avoid anybody drinking and driving. So it was like a group mm-hmm. of a couple of the girlfriends. And girl Jean friends. Is a
girl.
Jean is a woman.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting. I never assumed that Jean is a man's name.
Yeah, I think the reason I think of Jean as a male's name is, you know, my whole life is based on Friends references. And they try to say that Chandler's name, like, if his name wasn't Chandler, he'd be more like a Jean than, like, because it's like, but I guess the reference there is that they're saying that Jean is a more feminine name and he's more feminine. So I guess then I just proved myself.
Well. Wrong. All right.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Jean.
That's like so a very Jean... specific Asia thing.
I know. So Jean.
So Jean. Jean Myers is a white lady from Georgia who
okay.
became friends with Tamla.
And Tamla obviously is black.
Tamla is black.
Okay.
She is of Caribbean descent,
mm-hmm.
you know, but grew up in the Bronx.
Okay.
So at this sleepover, Tamla arrived with a bottle of tequila and then changed into like a onesie pajama set that was white with pink paw prints all over it.
Okay.
And Tamla was the only black person there.
Mm-hmm.
All of the other women were white. And the party was originally meant to be like girls only, ladies only.
Mm-hmm.
But Jean's boyfriend, Jose Barrera, ended up staying, as well as Tom Smith, who was married to one of the other people at the party.
Okay.
So her
husband is obviously home with the kids. Can I ask what Tamla does for a living?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if she does. She might be a stay-at-home mom.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I don't remember seeing that. So the group ended up being 9 women and 3 men who later became known as the Forsyth 12, which sounds like the Monterey 5 from Big Little Lies. So. Yeah. That vibe is going on here.
Ooh.
So according to police interviews, one of the men, because it said 3 men, but I only named 2.
Mm-hmm.
One of the men only like dropped off and then picked up his wife later.
Got it.
I don't know. He's counted in that, but I don't even remember what his name is. So.
Mm-hmm.
The women at the party drank, talked, watched an LSU versus Alabama football game upstairs. That seems important. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
While so Barrera and Smith, the men.
A football game?
Well, they're football moms. That's how they met.
Okay.
I feel like in Georgia, like LSU versus Bama, that's like a big deal game. Like,
okay.
It's more of like a thing that everybody, like my mom's really into college. Maybe not college, but, like, football.
Football, yeah.
Professional football.
Like, tailgating type
stuff. Yeah, my younger sister went to Ole Miss, and my mom was really into college football at that point.
Okay.
So it's, my mom's interest is sort of, like, dependent on us, but, like, my mom really loves the Saints because my sister and her husband.
Oh, they
like her
live.
Her husband's from New Orleans,
from
so.
New Orleans, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But so it's not uncommon for like that to be the thing.
Yeah. I was just thinking and, like if I was inviting, but I'm also not into football like that. But if like an adult sleepover and I'm inviting a bunch of my girlfriends over, like there's no way we would be watching football. But
no, you know, but
that, I get it. Like if that's the thing that even brought them together makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So they were upstairs. The women were upstairs doing that. And then the men, Barrera and Smith, were watching football in the Finnish basement. I'm assuming a different game.
Yeah.
Because why would you just... Why would unless you they just weren't allowed to hang out with each other.
Yeah, I feel like I would do that. I'd be like, okay, men have to go downstairs.
I know, you go... I would. Yeah. If I had a downstairs and an upstairs, I would do that.
like a whole... this top floor is off limits to any men.
Yes.
That's exactly what I
Get
would do.
Get out of here. Tamla was a smoker, so she would go outside occasionally to have a cigarette. And at one point, Tamla pulled out a joint, but Jean Myers asked her to stop. In the article by Niall Coppola that I mentioned, he says, quote, according to Myers' own statement, she had teased Horsford during the conversation, calling her the female Bob Marley and reminding her that Barrera worked as a pretrial officer and did not approve. So this is also like Georgia in 2018 where the laws are different than, you know, California in 2020. Yeah. But that, you know, your friend, your white friend calling you the female Bob Marley.
I know, I was like.
I'm like, that's a little bit of a.
Yeah.
Red flag. But that's like, that's one of those things that I feel like could be classified as like, oh, it's tongue-in-cheek humor. And I'm like, you know, towing the line. Not that I'm agreeing with that, but I'm just that like. Mentality of like, if you can't joke about it, blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
But it does sort of indicate
it's like, well,
that
I can say this because othering. I have black friends.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It does. It to me, it does indicate an attitude of like, even though if you like this person, there's still an attitude of othering, which is a problem.
Big problem.
Yeah. But Tamla listened to her. It was fine. It wasn't a big deal. She put the weed away.
Yeah.
The party continued eventually with Barrera and Smith joining, and they all played Cards Against Humanity. Mm. And this was when there was a group photo taken where all the women are sitting on the couch, sort of like leaning into each other in their pajamas, smiling happily, like you would never know what's about to happen.
Yeah.
Tamla drank throughout the night, mostly tequila, and her blood alcohol content was found to be pretty high, but according to like photos and videos and just sort of like the Instagram stuff that you take and witness statements, she seemed very coherent and not particularly drunk.
Okay.
So that will come back later. But the guests that weren't spending the night left around 11:30, and after the next over the next couple of hours, people started heading to bed. According to Myers and Barrera, the couple went to bed around 1:30 a.m., but Tamla stayed awake. The last person to be picked up was a woman named Bridget Fuller, who said goodbye to Tamla at 1:47 a.m. This is the woman that was picked up by that.
By her husband,
man.
Yeah.
By her husband.
I'm just looking at that photo of them on the couch.
Yeah. And we'll post that on our Instagram.
Yeah. Which one is the Jean? Do you know? She's the one that she's next to Tamla? Oh, this photo says, yeah. So Jean is the one that she's sitting next to. And she's got her arm around her. Yeah, the blonde.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And there's like random, what's this other girl? She's just like on her computer on the side. She doesn't even look like she was prepared for the picture.
No.
That's weird.
Okay. Yeah, who knows?
No, I just needed a visual, like what.
But yeah, there's so many, like if you go through, if you Google search Tamla, there's so many photos of everybody like hugging and smiling and having a great time. And pictures of her with them at other times too.
Yeah. Like it seems like they were all super close and.
Yeah.
Like for.
And like real friends.
Yeah. And for like, I mean, I love the idea of, you know, oh, I'm going to pick up, my wife is going to a party, you know, and like he picks her up at one point or the other woman gets picked up. And it was just like this people that didn't have a designated, like, it seems like this night started smart, you know, like, okay, we're going to, anybody can stay over, but if you do leave, you do have a designated driver that's picking you up, whatever.
Yeah. Okay. And it's a good party idea. I was like, oh, I'm going to do that.
Oh, this is so cool. We should post this other picture. Like, selfies going on.
So Bridget Fuller was picked up at 1:47 a.m. said goodbye to Tamla. She said that Tamla was eating a bowl of gumbo and planned to have a cigarette and then go to bed. And that's where it gets creepy.
Okay.
So that was at 1:47 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So the home security system logged that the back door opened, closed, and then opened again for a final time at 1:57 a.m.
I'm sorry. It opened, closed, and then opened again.
It was left open.
And left open. Got it. Okay. At 1:57 a.m. So
right.
8 minutes?
10 minutes.
Or 10 minutes. Okay.
10 minutes after that.
Okay.
At 8:45 the next morning, Madeline Lombardi, who was Jean Meyer's aunt who lived at the house, mm-hmm. was making a morning cup of coffee. She said she saw something chilling out the window in the backyard, the white dog print onesie. Lombardi said she said a prayer, then went upstairs to find Jean, telling her that something appeared to be wrong with, quote, her friend from the islands.
Ugh.
Yeah. So that was that.
She doesn't have a fucking name? Or she doesn't remember her name or something?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know who. I don't know, like, Madeline's state of mind. If she's the elderly aunt, like, she wasn't at the party with them.
Okay. So she wasn't, like, partying with them. She just lived there.
Right. But she knew enough to say.
Yeah.
She was from the islands. So why wouldn't she know her name?
Yeah.
You know? So that was at 8:45. Myers and Barrera called 911 just before 9 a.m. I didn't listen to the call because I don't like doing that, but I have transcript from the call.
Oh, okay. As long as you're transcribed.
It's both of them talking. Mm-hmm. So it starts off with Myers saying, she's not moving one bit. She's not breathing. She's completely face down in the yard. She is stiff. And then Barrera speaks and says she was drinking and it looks like, and then Myers cuts him off. I'm guessing maybe she fell off the balcony. So it seems like they're like, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I'd have to listen to really know, but it seems like they're like kind of like talking over each other, like
uh-huh.
panicking a bit.
If I can find it, can I listen?
Is it there?
Yeah.
Okay. Play it into your mic.
Hi, yes, I need an ambulance and a police to my home.
What's the address?
4450 Woodlake Court.
4450 Woodlake?
Woodlake.
Okay.
All right, 4450 Woodlake Court. What is your name?
My name is Jean Myers, J-E-A-N-N-E.
Jean.
Okay, and your phone number is 609?
Yes.
Okay, what's going on?
Yeah. They cut out the phone number.
We had people over last night. We were drinking. Most of us went to bed. One of them stayed on the balcony. She was drinking. And we just went outside. And she's laying face down in the backyard. It looks like me. I'm guessing maybe she fell off the balcony. But she's stiff.
Okay. Is she breathing?
I don't know. She's face down.
Okay. How old is she?
I'm 41. Here, hold on.
Hey, this is Jose Barrera.
Hey, have y'all checked to see if she's breathing?
She's not moving one bit. She's not breathing.
Okay.
I just tried to assess her, Tesla. She's completely face down in the yard. She is stiff.
Okay. Do you know if she, do you see any blood or anything where she... Are you there?
I am.
Okay.
I was outside.
It's okay. I'm not sure what happened to Alana for a second. Do you see any blood or anything to where, from where she fell?
I don't know if I should move her over. I mean, she is completely face down.
Okay. I mean, can you just check and see if she's breathing? If she's not breathing and you know she's gone, then just leave her where she's at. If she... Okay.
1 minute. I mean, it's 7 minutes long, and yeah, it keeps cutting.
That's the most.
But I. Oh, they just cut it out.
Okay, and that's the only.
They redacted some of it.
Do you know if she was suicidal?
seven people were over last night. Just, we were at, it was her birthday party. We were not the woman that we believe to be deceased, but it's my girlfriend's birthday party. Instead of having everybody go out, she had everyone stay in. And she was the last one I saw before everybody, I mean, everybody was typically put off the bed. She was the last one in the kitchen. She was just either waiting around for a ride or waiting until the morning.
Okay. How far is the, where she would have fell from? How far is the deck from the ground?
I would probably say... maybe 20 feet.
Okay.
You know, 20 feet from where your feet would be on the railing. The railing itself is maybe 3.5-4 feet.
Okay. And what is her name?
I know her name. We call her Tam. I'm assuming that's short for Tammy or Tamra.
Was she there with anyone else?
Tam Horsford, H-O-R-S-F-O-R-D, the black female. I don't believe anybody was. My girlfriend has cameras here on the back deck that we can check.
Okay.
That I think would have caught the incident if she fell from here. Again, I don't know how, it's hard to say if she fell from the deck or if she was already downstairs. She was the only smoker here, and I'm sorry, I can't do all the mess.
Okay, I'm so sorry about that. So you think she's probably smoking?
Yeah, she was the only smoker. I mean, I'm on the back deck right now, and, you know, cigarette lighter. I have to finger out here.
Okay.
I'm just trying to see where her wrist line came from.
Okay. All right. Are all the people that were there last night, are they still at your house?
There are four people that were here last night that are no longer there.
Okay. And they just left this morning, or they leave last night?
Do you know roughly what time each of them left? I think the last time that I personally saw Tam was probably about 1 in the morning before I got upstairs to bed.
Okay.
And at that point, she was the only one in the kitchen. I know.
Okay. Let me see where everybody is. I have one deputy that's about to pull into your subdivision. So I'll stay on the phone with you just for a minute. Is this going to be around back? Is that the way he needs to go?
Right. So when he pulls up to the residence, there will be one car in the street, four at the same time.
And does he need to come and go through the house, or does he need to walk around the back?
They can go around to the side. I'm going to grab my shoes. And I'll direct them when they get here. Now, it'll be easier for them because she's laying in the yard downstairs, basically on the patio downstairs.
I have 7 million questions.
Mm-hmm.
What? And some I'm sure you're probably going to answer, but does anybody feel a little alarmed by how calm he is?
I mean, yes, he is also a pretrial officer, and turns out his girlfriend's name is Jean.
Yeah, Jean.
So I feel like he might have a bit more experience.
Okay. And is that why he says the girl we believe to be deceased?
I think so.
Okay, because that was like, what? Like, who speaks like that?
Right. So he is law enforcement. So
okay,
like
that answers 1 million questions. But I also don't understand why he said, when she asks him how high the balcony is, right? he says it's about 20 feet from where your feet would be on the railing.
Like she was standing on the railing.
Yeah, but like it feels like he only like leaned into that theory after she said something about suicide. Like, why would you assume that her feet were on the railing rather than her falling? Because this whole time they've been saying it looks like she fell from the railing. Mm-hmm. She's been drinking.
I'll get into some of that.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I'm just...
You're not the only one that flagged that.
Okay. All right. Because that just, like, doesn't... That would not be my thinking. First of all, my thinking would not be to... Well, I guess now that I know that he's law enforcement or pretrial officer or whatever the hell, if I were Jean, or whatever her name is, if I were her, I would... You know, I would also probably just give the phone to him too, I guess.
Right.
But like when she first gives it to him without my knowledge of like what his background is, I was thinking like, why would I give the phone to my boyfriend who has no idea? He doesn't even know her name.
If my friend, this is the thing where it gets into like judging people on their
how they shock reactions, in these
which is like not, there's no science. Like there's no right
Everybody
way.
Reacts differently, but.
Right. But if I was dealing with my friend, finding my friend like that, somebody that like Gabe might not know that much, I would definitely be like, can you deal with this? I cannot deal with this.
Yeah, true. Yeah. And you're right. It's like everybody will deal with trauma and shock differently. Mm-hmm. I'm so weirded out by how calm and, but I guess that like that kicks in, but it's like just certain words and the way he was phrasing certain things felt like he was setting it up, not actually telling.
Yes, exactly. And it feels like even though he has experience, it's like, this is a personal thing. That's like literally in his backyard.
I just argued against judging people a little bit. Also, that's a long time from 8:45, 15 minutes, almost 15 minutes, they didn't call 911?
Yep. I'm going to get into everything.
Okay, I'm going to let you go into your stuff, because clearly I'm just reacting based on that, and it's just like, that's a long time.
It is. Tamla was pronounced dead at the scene.
Okay.
Her body was immediately sent for autopsy. Mm-hmm. But even before the coroner's report came back, the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office was just working with the theory that her death was an accident and assumed her cause of death was from a fall from the second story outer deck. So the case was open for 4 months until the official determination came in February 20th, 2019. They cited the toxicology report, which tested positive for THC, weed, and her blood alcohol content was at 0.238, almost three times the legal limit to drive. Right. They said that the marijuana and probable blackout led to her fall. They said the alarm log and an unlit cigarette and lighter that Barrera said he found at the upper deck also point to a fall. They closed the case and released the reports to the public, but they didn't provide answers to they didn't provide the answers that Tamla's family and friends were searching for.
Yeah.
And obviously, by looking at your face,
yes,
that's not satisfying. And I agree. So it seemed the first thing that was like beyond the call
mm-hmm.
that seemed weird is that her blood alcohol content was so insanely high.
Yeah.
But to everybody, even the person that saw her 10 minutes before mm-hmm. she went outside, she seemed like basically just tipsy all night.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed very odd that nobody heard her fall.
Yeah.
And it seemed especially odd that a 20-foot fall caused her injuries, which let me get into what those were.
Okay.
First, a dislocated wrist.
Okay.
A broken neck. A laceration to her heart muscle. And death. Like, 20 feet, you might break an arm.
Mm-hmm.
It seems incredibly odd to me that the scene wasn't preserved. No evidence was tested.
Yeah.
Witnesses weren't immediately interviewed. Photographs, nothing.
Yeah, they and just... the fact that this officer, boyfriend, officer, whatever, was on the balcony to be like, oh, yeah, there's cigarettes and a lighter. Like, nothing should have been touched. Or right. even, like, they shouldn't even have been in the house, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you'll answer this, too. When she, is it right for the 911 officer to ask, or operator to ask him to find out if she's breathing? Because yeah. he has to touch her.
Yeah, I think it's, I think you can, I mean, it would muddy it a bit, but it's yeah. kind of like.
I feel like that's contaminating.
She said don't turn her over, but just see if she's breathing, which you could do if, you know, she didn't say check for a pulse or anything. You could mm-hmm. do it if, and it's the thing where it's like, it's, you know, an accident, it's unclear. An EMT that got there would do the same thing. They just might have gloves on.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it also for, I think for the 911 operator, they have to know what kind of care to send immediately to. I mean, I think she probably sent everything, but.
Yeah, and I feel like if somebody, just from what they can see, she clearly is unconscious. So mm-hmm. whether she's breathing or not, there would be nothing that they should do to her to revive her until the EMTs got there. So sending right. what care shouldn't be something that'd be like, well, I don't know who to send. Like, you send fucking ambulance, you send EMTs.
But if she was breathing, the 911 operator could have walked him through CPR.
But you should, I feel like if somebody fell, you could potentially do more damage to, like, if she had a broken back and she had a broken neck.
Yeah.
You don't,
but I think it would be irresponsible for the, but I think it would be irresponsible for the 911 operator to say, like, okay, don't find out if she's alive, if she's breathing or not. Like,
I just,
because they don't know if she fell 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. I would be like, oh, no, I'm not going to go over and touch her or anything, but I can see from her back or, like, her, you know, like, she's not moving at all. And just going on the balcony to see, like, all of that should have been shut down and photographed and treated as, like, oh, we don't know what happened. This could have been foul play. This could have been something salacious happened. Let's approach the scene as if something did happen like that. And then if we find out that it wasn't, then we go, like, it's almost like adding time to the oven. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to add time to your cake. You want to make sure that, you know, you can add time, but you can't take time away. It's kind of the same concept.
Yeah.
But, wow.
And thing for me, is like, if they were all, a broken neck. If they were all, like, just normal people, then, like, what happened? I would be like, well, if they don't know, whatever. But he's like, he's law enforcement. He does know.
Yeah.
So, okay. So I'm going to get into more of, like, the background of the world of this.
You said, sorry, one thing. You said she had a broken wrist, a broken neck, and a laceration to what in her heart? Like a muscle?
Her heart muscle.
Her heart muscle. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the broken wrist and neck could have happened in the fall, but the heart muscle thing, that, I don't know.
I know. I'm not sure what, I'm not sure
what that, that is. Yeah.
Okay. So Forsyth County, where this case takes place, is 40 miles northeast of Atlanta. It's primarily white, and Cumming, where they lived, is the main city, which attracts families and has lots of land available and the county fair, cute downtown, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
Of course, because it's America, Forsyth is deeply rooted in a racist history. In 1912, there was a, quote, racial cleansing. And from this Niall Capello article, it says, quote, when a black man was blamed for the rape of a white woman and another was blamed for the rape and beating of a different white woman who died from her injuries, white mobs descended on the local black homes and businesses. In the end, the town's 1,098 black residents, about 10% of the population at the time, were driven out. For decades, the county remained entirely white. And as recently as 1990, there were only 14 black residents in the entire county.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
What?
So, yes, crazy. This is, like, also the kind of town where everybody knows everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just, like, literally, like, a ticking friggin' time bomb.
Wow.
Sheriff Ron Freeman and the deputy coroner Chris Shelton are cited as an example of how everybody knows each other, which is problematic.
Yeah.
In 2014, Shelton, the deputy coroner, was forced to resign from the police force after sending around photos of himself posing with racist mammy dolls. 2 years later, he was in photos for Ron Freeman, the sheriff's 2016 campaign for sheriff. And when Freeman won, Shelton was reinstated as deputy coroner.
Ugh.
So.
Yeah.
Shelton also works for Operation 21, which is a business owned by law enforcement and military vet Brian Dubois that, quotes, aims to educate offenders on the law to help reduce recidivism. And Brian's wife, Anna, served as treasurer for Freeman's sheriff campaign. So Operation 21, like, I didn't really look too much into that, but that doesn't sound like that bad of a thing to, like, educate people on, like, what the law is so they don't break laws again. But the fact that it's, like, from a law enforcement and military background makes me feel like maybe it's...
Yeah,
I'm a little wary of it. But basically, that guy that founded that Shelton works with, his wife was also on the campaign. So it's just like these sort of like high powered peoples all runs in the same circle, which like happens everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. You make friends, you make colleagues at everything. It's just that like sometimes that's not a life or death situation. But that group is also friends with people at the party, including Stacy and Tom Smith. So Tom was one of the men that stayed, and Stacy was his wife.
Yeah.
And the public has called these relationships into question in terms of this case, citing bias and pressure to protect friendships as a reason to cover up what really happened.
Yeah.
And of course, it's all denied. The Forsyth County Public Information Officer, Stacy Miller, said, quote, there is no relationship between Ron Freeman and the DeBloises, can't say that last name, or anyone else at the party the night of Tamla Horsford's tragic death. The FCSO investigates each case with the same tenacity without bias, no matter who the victim, witnesses, or suspects are, which is always what you say when you don't. In this Niall Capello article, he points out that the optics of a black woman dying in this way are certainly fishy. And like, you know, there's instinctual things that make you like raise an eyebrow at it, but there is actual evidence that supports that something went down.
Yeah.
And here it is. All those questions you've had.
Okay.
Now is the time.
I'm excited.
So... Well, let's not get excited about
I'm excited that my answers are going to be I'm going to get answers. Yeah. Or okay. It might not be the answers Fair I want, enough. But I'm excited.
It's not going to be the answers you want. Oh, damn. But
now I'm not excited.
Yeah, sorry. Tamla had blunt force trauma to her head, neck, torso, and extremities, including abrasions on her face, four different kinds, on her skull and her brain, the dislocation of her right wrist, cuts on her arms and leg. She also had a broken neck and laceration of the right ventricle of her heart. That to me, like, I don't know, that the heart thing is crazy. It's like, because it doesn't say that she had a broken sternum or a broken rib that's like maybe that punctured
it. Yeah.
But it seems like she was stabbed or something. It's so strange. I don't know what. That's the thing that nobody knows what that is. Could that, that's the but thing then that makes are they me saying so confused. That
could have happened from like hitting the ground?
That's what the official story is, mm-hmm. but like all of those injuries.
Yeah, no, like, all of those injuries together definitely. For me, points to there was a struggle before she hit the ground.
Also, her body position was examined at the scene. Okay. And the lead investigator, Mike Christian, says that most notable when Tamla was turned over, it was the fact that she had come to rest face down. And her head had not been, like, canted to one side or the other, like, turned at all. Her head was, like,
in
face down.
Like, right straight. Here, like this?
Yes, like right down. So the other thing was that Horsford's legs, her legs were extended behind her with both feet pointing to the right, and her right arm close to her body, where her left body was extended and like bent at the elbow, like down. So if you fall head first and you break your neck, mm-hmm. on the way down, the instinct is to raise your arms.
Yeah.
If you're falling head first. And turn your head to the side. So she would have landed like on the side of her face.
Yeah.
And her arms underneath her face.
Yeah.
But instead it was like she was laying down in bed. And her wounds.
Somebody moved her.
Her wounds are more in line with defensive wounds, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And which points to like maybe there's an altercation on the balcony or even have being moved, like you said. And due to the cuts on her shins specifically, the coroner's first theory was that she fell from the ground. Like she tripped over some bushes and fell, which where like, you know, if there's bruising and stuff. But you don't die from tripping over a bush.
Yeah.
And
that theory is that she didn't fall from the balcony, that she was already on the ground at the time, is what you're saying?
Well, It's the kind of thing where the coroner saw those and was like, oh, maybe she tripped and fell, but then saw her broken neck and was like, oh, no, that can't be. So she must have fallen from a higher height.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like immediately ruled out, but the cuts on her legs were never explained in this new theory that she fell from a taller height.
Yeah. Okay.
And
she was wearing pants.
And yeah. So it's so weird. And, okay, because the death was thought to be an accident, nobody ever took fingerprints. And those security cameras that he mentioned.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the phone call. Uh-huh. Dead and not recording.
Of course.
No sexual assault kit. No fingernail clippings were done. They said that those steps aren't routine if there's no foul play suspected.
How can you not suspect foul play when somebody falls or pushed or whatever the fuck? But why are you not doing those
things? Why would you not just like, why would you not make that routine?
Yeah. Like, you know? That should be your first, like, that should be the procedure to do first. And then you rule out. How can you rule out foul play if you don't, like, start with that procedure? It doesn't make any sense. You can't go back.
Because you have a pre-officer trial. On the 911 call saying that he thinks she fell. And that's like what they fucking ran with, you know? They also didn't test the contents of the tequila bottle that Tamla brought.
Oh.
In case there was something else in it. Yeah. And they said that when the suspect is deceased, they don't test for illicit substance because there's no one to hold responsible if drugs are found. What?
I'm sorry, say so that again?
So immediately they're saying, oh, we didn't test the bottle she brought because she would have been the suspect in bringing drugs. So if we can't hold her responsible, there's no point. But I'm like, assuming she's...
drugging herself, number one.
It's making her a suspect. Yeah. And rules out... like, that logic is insane to me.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So we're not going to test for drugs because then there's nobody that we can take down for those drugs. But what if those drugs were brought by somebody else?
And she was the only one... with tequila. Yeah, I know.
Like, if she was the only one drinking from that bottle of tequila, then maybe...
Yeah.
Wow.
Just... I was like, that's not a real thing. That's not a real thing. That's not a real thing.
No, it probably is.
That's insane. One of the party attendants, Stacy Smith, the one that's married to Tom Smith, who's friends with the coroner people.
Oh, yeah. And they were the ones that actually spent the night.
Yes.
Okay.
She expressed doubt over Tamla's fall.
Mm.
The quote I have is, I don't get it at all. I mean, I've been on that deck like a million times. Like, I've looked and I've tried. And this is where she's saying, like, leaning over
mm-hmm.
as if, like, to say, like, that Tamla leaned over to throw up but went too far, maybe, over the edge. Okay. She's like... I've done it a million times, and
she's thrown up over the balcony a million times.
Well, you know.
Hey, maybe. I mean, maybe, you know.
Yeah. So she was speaking to an officer named Officer Sexton. I don't mm-hmm. know first name. And in response to that, Officer Dick Sexton.
No.
Really, sorry.
That is not his name, is it?
No. Okay. No. I don't have his first name. I was just like, what a last name.
Okay.
He responds saying, I mean, like you said, that she leaned over and she was trying to throw up mm-hmm. or thought she was going to throw up. Maybe she sat on the rail and was smoking or just who knows. Which, like, why would you say that in an interview?
Yeah.
And who the fuck is I know we're not in court, so but that's leading the witness.
Like, she was drunk. Fine. But... no one is going to sit on the side of a balcony intoxicated to smoke a cigarette. Like, that logically, but that even doesn't
if
make
she,
sense.
Regardless even if of she sat on the side, even if she sat on the side to smoke a cigarette and fell off, she would have fallen backwards and not landed face down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, Stacy maintained that Horsford wasn't acting sick or drunk. Bridget Fuller, who was the last one to see her.
Yeah.
Said that at 1:47 when she said goodbye, she didn't seem drunk.
Mm-hmm.
But she also said maybe she was a seasoned drinker who needed an enormous amount of alcohol to knock her on her ass, which is not helpful.
No.
Bridget.
Bridget should have shut up.
Tamla's friend Diane Koulouvaris, who wasn't at the party, sums it up by saying, quote, I just got several inconsistent stories. The accident theory just doesn't make sense. Not when everyone there said she was fine.
Yeah.
And that's true.
And it's just so convenient that she was the only one up that late. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
How convenient is it that, like, oh, she's a smoker, so she was out on the balcony. Oh, God. Mm-hmm.
So then, as they're about to close the case in February 2019. Jose Barrera, that officer we've been talking about that called 911.
Yeah.
He is fired because he used his position to illegally access the incident report and name record via the records management database. It is unclear what he was trying to do, but he was trying to do something and he was caught.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
So and he was just fired? They didn't, like, question?
Just fired. Of course. Ugh. What? Officers don't get any sort of repercussions, you know?
Oh, my God.
But then the other crazy thing is that this only came out, the fact that he was fired and mm-hmm. why he was fired, only came out because another one of Tamla's friends, Michelle Wynn Graves, who was working really hard to get justice for her,
mm-hmm.
was sued by 7 out of the Forsyth 12, including Myers and Barrera. They sued her for defamation, saying that she was posting on Facebook accusing them of being responsible for Tamla's death. So in the lawsuit, all this stuff came to light, including that Barrera was fired for trying to access these files.
Wow. And you know what just shocks me? Jean, or whatever her name is, you should be the one that's trying to prove or figure out what happened to your friend.
Right? Right? Like why if you're as innocent as you fucking say.
Exactly. So why wouldn't you want to find out what really happened? Or if there's all these questions, if there's all of these inconsistencies and what actually happened to her, why wouldn't you be out there fighting to find out what happened to your friend? Why is other people doing
because
that?
Guess
why
what?
Are you hiding? She's hiding. It's like that automatically shows me that you have something
so
to hide.
So fucking fishy.
Oh my God.
So, and the lawsuit was dismissed because... Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
And, but they have appealed, but Myers and Barrera dropped from the suit.
Oh.
Which, so to me, I'm like, they're.
Yeah.
The ones.
Yeah. And to be, to, like, I feel like what they're doing is they are saying, like, okay, we're gonna sue this person for, because, you know, defamation of character or whatever bullshit you want to assign to it. But also, like, now that there's, through that lawsuit, so much shit is being dug up about, like, obviously the intent behind all of this stuff. So they're like, wait, let's back out completely, because obviously this is too much. And people are going to start digging deeper into a story we actually want to bury. So, I hate them.
So there have been other advocates trying to get Tamla's case opened back up, including Ashland Harris, who was the original organizer of the Change.org petition for this case.
Ooh.
So, but Ashland says that she has been targeted for criticizing the Forsyth County Sheriff's Department. And in November 2019, a Cumming police officer detained Harris while looking for three men involved in a car accident. She's a woman. Actually, I don't want to assume gender identity, but not. Okay, I'm getting confirmation that she is a woman. But Harris was eventually cleared and let go, and then went on to file a complaint against him.
Okay.
He was later exonerated by Police Chief David Marsh. Later that same month, deputies showed up at Harris's home with a warrant for her devices based on, quote, the suspicion that Harris sent an accusatory anonymous email to an individual present the night of Tamla's death. Ashland denies this and has sued Forsyth County Sheriff's Office, Detective Jeffrey Rowe, and Sheriff Ron Freeman for civil rights violations.
Oh, good Lord.
Sounds like a fucking cover up to me. And it wasn't until the Black Lives Matter movement reignited interest in the story that it got attention from celebrities, and the petition picked up steam with more than 680,000 signatures asking for the FBI to reinvestigate the case.
Ooh.
Tamla's family's lawyer, Ralph Fernandez, released a letter explaining his own interpretation of the evidence.
Okay.
He thinks that homicide is a strong possibility, and he was particularly struck by the lack of autopsy photos, which he believes were excluded because someone ordered them to be.
Okay.
After that letter, the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office and GBI, which I believe is Georgia Bureau of Investigations, they both released statements claiming that the autopsy photos were taken and standing by their original findings. Fernandez, the lawyer, then released another statement that included records of multiple attempts to get the autopsy photos, where he was denied every time, even while requests for the photos were ignored, even when other requests were fulfilled. So he had the fucking receipts. And now the FCSO and GBI claim it's because they don't have a release from Tamla's next of kin to release the photos. But Fernandez says that that wasn't ever mentioned as a thing to be needed until he made these public statements.
Yeah. Of course, they're backtracking to cover their asses. Oh,
right.
This is why we didn't do this, because it's your fault. You're the reason why we didn't do it.
Yeah. So Forsyth County Sheriff's Office did respond to the mounting pressure. They formally asked GBI to assume the case and open an independent investigation, which is a win, but many, including Fernandez, believe that Georgia Bureau of Investigations themselves are compromised, mm-hmm. and they won't perform an unbiased investigation, which, mm-hmm. like, duh.
Yeah.
So, you know, Fernandez and these 680,000 people are pushing for an FBI to open the case. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation is currently investigating and asks anyone with any information to come forward. So my theory is that everybody is friend. Like, I don't think that they, like, lured her there or anything like that. I don't think anything happened. I think she got tipsy. I think she was smoking. The things that, to me, stand out are, A, all her injuries. Mm-hmm. B, the door opening, closing, and then opening again.
And never closing again.
Which, to me, means somebody followed her outside. Mm-hmm. Like, she opened the door, stepped outside, closed it behind her. And
somebody
and then somebody came out to join her.
Yeah.
And just left the door open.
Yeah.
The Jose Barrera planting the fact that she jumped or fell.
Yeah.
And that everybody's sort of running with that. All this cover-up mm-hmm. stuff, bullshit, smelly stuff. The fact that he admitted to touching her legs after they found her, which is how they knew she was stiff.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
So he said that he did touch her already, which goes back to that, like, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. What? Like, the chain of evidence and all that shit that they say.
But
like,
And he was already planting that he touched her, so, like, anything could be explained away mm-hmm. with touching her after the death.
Yeah.
No investigation of any sort of foul play was taken. And then the final thing that gets me is that he said that he found an unlit cigarette and a lighter mm-hmm. and moved it. He admitted to moving it after he found it, after he knew that she was on the ground. So, for me, what I feel like happened... Mm-hmm. is she went out to have a cigarette, closed the door behind her. He came out after her. I think he must have made an advance or something, and she was not into it.
Yeah.
And then he lost it. Mm-hmm. And then is just trying to cover everything up. I don't know if the girlfriend is involved mm-hmm. in that theory, or if she is just standing by him, if he was. I don't know if they're still together.
Yeah.
I don't know anything of that. But that's seems like the simplest and most realistic explanation mm-hmm. to me.
Yeah. I feel like I don't know what obviously went down on the balcony, but there's no way with all the evidence that they have that they can inconclusively say
mm-hmm.
like this is our decision. Like, there's so many other like factors involved that this is not a clear cut, this was this, you know, like, this is mm-hmm. an accident. Like, you can't say that and not
you can't
be able
say that
to
unless
explain.
You've ruled everything out.
Yeah, like, you can't, like, you're not explaining how she's got cuts on her legs when she was wearing a onesie.
Right?
So how does she have
right?
cuts on her legs?
And, like, what? There's nothing between the balcony and the mm-hmm. the ground
to scratch her up
that
like
she would have fall that would have scratched
yeah.
her.
Just the position of the body, it looks staged. Like, it looks like it was staged.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a natural way. Like, I hate to say this, but it's not a natural way a body falls from 20 feet. Like,
no.
That's just...
Like, she must have... If she fell like that, she was already unconscious when she fell, you know?
Yeah. And, like, tossed off in a way to explain, like, oh, this...
Because even if you're blackout drunk and falling, like mm-hmm. you were saying...
Yeah, you would...
You still have motor control, like...
Not only that, but
if
you
you're passed
also
out,
don't...
But blacked out is different.
You don't fall... Like, it just... Like, your body doesn't just, like, seize up that way, you know what I mean? Like
right,
your feet aren't gonna be both pushed to one side. Your face isn't gonna be faced down into the grass or whatever.
Right.
What she fell
right.
into. Your arm isn't gonna be one on one side. You know what I mean? Like, it's not. There's no. I just feel like either she was pushed and then when she got down there they moved her, or mm-hmm. she was already down there dead, so yeah. she died somewhere else and then they staged her body that way to be like, okay, well, this is how you would fall, you know, like mm-hmm. a couple drunken people in the middle of the night, half all tired and just trying to figure out how to you know, cover this up. And who mm-hmm. else better to cover it up than your boyfriend, who is a police officer? Yeah, they're good at that.
And your friend who's the fucking county,
yeah,
the coroner.
Yeah, I yeah. And the yeah, whole it's stiff so thing,
it's so like, and specific, not releasing the autopsy photos.
Yeah,
that do you think is her family, huge red flag.
I know that there's some legal thing you have to go through to get a body exhumed, like for a second autopsy. Do you think that they're I don't know, obviously you don't know what they're thinking, but if like getting a second autopsy would be helpful in
maybe,
like, is there, I don't know, like, what, you know how many cases they I feel do like that this, and then they find yeah. new stuff and they're like, oh well, this would have,
yeah, I feel like they would need real evidence of like it's like this person killed her.
Yeah
you know, but I don't know, maybe yeah.
I just feel like
if she was a white woman, I feel like they would have done it. Mm-hmm. If she was a white woman, I feel like
if she was a white woman, none of this would be happening.
They would have assumed it was murder first. Yeah, instead of just being like a drunk party girl.
Yeah. And just the words he was using, like, she's already stiff, you know, who mm-hmm. we assume to be deceased.
Yeah.
You know, and then just the starting the whole 911 call with, we think that she fell. She was really drunk. She was,
it's
she
all
was
about
by herself.
Protecting themselves.
Yeah, like they're trying to explain things in a way that separates themselves from the incident.
Yeah.
But then
it's like, look over here, not at me.
Yeah. And then the 911 operator being like, did anybody know if she was suicidal? And then for him to pivot so quickly to, yeah, well, we don't know, but if she did, it's about 20 feet from standing on the, yeah, like just pivoting.
Yeah, like
his
she
whole,
purposefully jumped.
Yeah, like pivoting all of that, like so.
I don't
quickly.
Think he went that far.
No, but I just like, feel like
he didn't quite
just
say
weird.
The way you're saying it, but like the jumping from the balcony,
yeah,
was weird.
And if she
that
jumped,
was weird.
She would have been feet first.
I know, unless she swan.
That. Yeah, unless she was
like,
feet,
oh,
I'm going to fucking.
Like, 20 feet is not
that much, no. I wonder what my
even if you fell head first.
Is 20, I don't know what 20 feet is from. But it just
I wonder
doesn't
if I can Google, like, will I die from a 20-foot fall? Let's
see. Okay. Let's I don't see. Think so. Honestly, I feel like you would be really hurt. But blunt force trauma.
Oh, I said, will I die from? And it said, a broken heart?
Aw.
Okay, falls from more than 20 feet usually result in a trip to the emergency room.
More than 20 feet? So then
yeah.
under 20
Wait,
feet.
Wait, this says 50% of patients who fall 4 stories will die.
That wasn't 4 stories.
No. And that's even only 50% of people. This man.
No, I don't. I just don't think that the fall was like the clear cause of death. I think that.
Wait, oh my gosh. Listen to this mm-hmm. thing. Sorry. Could you survive a fall from 20 to 30 feet out a window? In my novel, the character falls and lands in a bush. Would she survive in real life? And then someone answers, this actually happened to me.
No.
So obviously he survived.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I'm just not. Yeah. I'm not convinced that this was a fall
I'm
situation.
Not either.
And whatever the altercation was on the balcony, whether it happened on the balcony or not, or somewhere else, she was definitely staged. And I don't
yes,
know.
Definitely.
I'm not, again, I'm not a scientist. I know that rigor mortis sets in a certain amount of time. Like, my thing, like, I have more questions just knowing like, after you die, like, was her, where was her blood pooling? Was it on her front
That's
side?
Why they're not friggin'.
Like, they didn't release all of any of the autopsy stuff. Because that would be, that would be a clear sign.
It would have the answers.
Yeah, like, if her blood was pooling on her front, like, on her front side, then she died that way. And wasn't moved.
And wasn't moved.
But
right.
if it was on her side or on her back, so or if it was inconsistent, fishy. Then you know that she didn't die the way that she was. That she's laying.
Yeah, exactly. The thing, the creepiest thing to me is the door.
Yeah.
And also, like, the leaving it open.
Yeah, that was a choice.
Means that was a choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was a lucky accident or something, but it's like, if it was actually closed, it would indicate more of an accident.
Yes,
because how does somebody get back in?
Yeah,
right. But it seems almost premeditated to leave it open so you can, like, sneak back inside.
I wonder, did they ever I mean, if they didn't release autopsy, like, anything, then what was her, due to the rigor mortis, they would be able to say specifically what time she died. Because if she died at 9 o'clock.
Exactly. Because she went outside at 1:57 and somebody else followed her immediately. Mm-hmm. And her blood alcohol content was way higher than anybody had said. So if she was out there and they were drinking more and they had 4 more drinks, that would have gotten her to the point. And then it's 3 a.m.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And that's a few hours later. And if she died at, like, 3 a.m., 4 a.m., that's, you know, so it's not like she died right at 2 a.m. when she walked outside.
Yeah.
It's like, there is a,
like,
time.
I feel like there's so many things that they.
And if Jeannie Myers, whatever her name is fucking Barrera's cover up, and she's like, no, we were in a bed at 1:30, but she knows he didn't come to bed till 4.
Yeah.
Then she's also.
Yeah. But there, and that's like, just based on what information they do have, there's a way to map out a timeline here and see who, like, based on her time of death, which they could find out through her autopsy, then they can pinpoint, like, let's say she did die at 2:30 a.m. or between, it's usually not, like, to the minute, but it's usually, like, she died between 2 and 3 in the morning. So if that was the case, then the door closing at 1:47 or 1:57, whatever time that was, then that happened way before she died. Or if she died before that, then that happened after she died, which means that she wasn't on the balcony at all.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so many things that could be answered that I feel like they're purposely not answering because somebody is. And honestly, your whole theory that the police officer, what was his name?
Barrera.
Like, it seems like the GBI would do all of this for a fellow officer who was
fellow
involved.
Officer, and then also people at the party that are even higher.
Yeah, like, have higher relationships with
political
people.
Stuff. Yeah,
like,
this is,
and,
like, the
and
perfect
this, to
recipe
them
for
is,
that.
It's so easy. It's very easy to say, well, you know what? All the evidence pointed this way, and the reason we didn't go to a more, like, the reason we didn't say, okay, this is foul play, was because we already assumed that this was an accident, and we took. We took the word of our fellow officer. We took the word of our, you know, friend who was at the party who says this. Like, they're trusting the people there who really the only people that should be trusted are when you walk into that scene, the people involved, EMTs, the coroner, all of those people should process that scene as if anything is possible. Mm-hmm. Not, well, we're taking the word of this guy who very much could have been involved. So it just seems like such an easy way to cover all of this up.
Yeah.
And
the fact that he was then later fired feels like...
Oh, I want to know what,
like,
the hell
he
was
totally
going
to do. In, I know. If he was totally innocent, I think he probably just wanted to see if they were suspecting
him. Yeah, them.
But if he was totally innocent and wasn't causing a problem, they would have just been like, come on, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think they like... But then also that kind of goes against my theory, because if they fired him... then maybe they're not covering up for him, because then what's the point of covering I think up that for there's him a and limit. Then firing him through?
Well, I don't think that they're only covering up for him. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if the friggin', you know, friend of the deputy coroner and the sheriff is at this thing mm-hmm. where a murder happened,
yeah,
that's going to ruin careers. So mm-hmm. I don't think it was just for
yeah.
this one guy. I think it was for multiple people. Mm-hmm. But I also think that there's a limit to what they're going to cover up for. So true. If he was like, you know, I don't know who, I don't know, what else but then he's it's up
like,
to.
Is the limit of covering up, like covering up, like looking into a report, but then the limit well, for I covering think that up that isn't murder?
He was only fired, I think, when it came out that he... Oh, no, sorry. No, that's wrong. I think that is... The limit is, like, when it's very clearly, like, you can't spin that he broke the law and there's evidence.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
I mean, for me, limit would be covering up murder. But I guess it's well, not yes, for them. Well,
yes, that's why you're not a police officer.
Wow. So, at yeah. this point where... So, it's not reopened, but...
So, the case... It's sort of reopened. The Georgia Bureau of Investigations has an active investigation going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know at the time of airing what will have happened, mm-hmm. but we can post updates on our Instagram and you can check it out there.
Cool.
So at the time of Tamla's death, her youngest son was only 4 years old.
Oh my God.
Yeah. She's survived by her husband, Leander, their 5 sons and 1 daughter, and her many friends that she so easily made at every chapter in her life. You can help by signing the petition on change.org and emailing the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office and Georgia Bureau of Investigations to demand that the FBI take over this investigation. Tamla's families deserve answers, and we hope that together we can help them get them. This week's episode was written and edited by me, Devin Balsamo Gillis, with music by Holly Amber Church and social media by Kelsey Gruenberg.
For pictures and sources, please follow us on Instagram at onthearbehalf_pod and on Twitter at onthearbehalf_.
Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen.
On Their Behalf, thank you for listening. Thank you.